You're with us for The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. We're looking into shortages of critically needed meds in the U.S. due to our heavy reliance on drugs made in other countries. One example, lupus patients who rely on hydroxychloroquine as a treatment for their illness are concerned about shortages as doctors experiment with using it for COVID-19. We've heard meds to alleviate breathing difficulty to sedate coronavirus patients are reportedly in very high demand with depleting stock. Have you been unable to get a drug you need since the pandemic took hold? Have you had to ration your dosage? What changes have occurred when you pick up your prescriptions? We're at 800-642-1234. Catherine Eben is an investigative journalist who covers the pharmaceutical industry, and she wrote the book Bottle of Lies, The Inside Story of the Generic Drug Boom, came out last year. Catherine, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here with you today.
So the vast majority of the manufacturing plants that make these active ingredients for all U.S. drugs are located overseas. How did we come as a country to rely on overseas manufacturers for our pharmaceuticals?
You know, there was no master plan for this to happen, which is part of the problem. This is something that happened in a wave of globalization, in the early 2000s with the FDA scrambling to keep up. The last penicillin plant in the U.S. closed in 2004. But in that year, the FDA had more manufacturing plants to inspect overseas than it did within U.S. borders. And, you know, the question that I tackle in Bottle of Lies is, how do we protect the flow of drugs into the U.S., and how do we ensure that these plants are following good manufacturing practices?
Why are plants in India or in China, why would they be based there versus anywhere else in the globe? Is it environmental regulations? Is it labor? What is it?
Well, you know, this really began with the flow of antibiotic manufacturing into China. And China became masterful at making what are called antibiotic salts, partly through generations of practice in fermentation, their whole soy sauce industry. But also it had to do with lax environmental laws, because this kind of manufacturing throws off often, you know, huge waste products and contaminated water and all of that, and also incredibly cheap labor. As well in India, because of certain changes in the law there in the 1970s, Indian manufacturers became expert at reverse engineering, which is what you need in order to make generic drugs, low-cost generic drugs.
So it sounds like that there were really aspects that these countries honed in on to become leaders in the industry, ramping up before even the U.S. could bat an eye.
That is really what happened. And now, for example, India calls itself the pharmacy to the world, and they're not really wrong. We get 40% of all of our low-cost generics are made there. And, you know, in an era of coronavirus, we've seen this play out with this wild scramble to get drug ingredients and finished doses continuing to flow from these countries that we rely on, with their governments trying to shut down the export of drugs.
Connect the dots for us. How is the pandemic affecting drug makers' ability to produce ingredients? How does that work?
Well, so for example, you know, when there was the outbreak was peaking in China, of course, their manufacturing plants were shuttered. And if nobody's working in their manufacturing plants, they're not making the active ingredients that we rely on for export. Then India said, well, we have to ensure that we have drugs to treat our own population, so we're going to stop the export of 26 crucial drugs from our country. We're going to keep it for our own population. Of course, decisions like that have, you know, seismic effects throughout the entire drug supply.
We're talking with Catherine Eben. She's an investigative journalist who's been covering the pharmaceutical industry. And we're looking at the drug supply chain inventories and where drugs are made. You can join in with your insights, your questions at 800-642-1234. How do you want lawmakers to regulate the industry? Are you trying to stock up on crucial drugs for the next few months? What is that like? And what do you think of the global pandemic? How will that change the way prescription drugs are made? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Let's take a call on this. Kenneth is here from Janesville. Hi, Kenneth.
Hello. It seems to me that greed was the primary motive for drugs being made overseas, and that they could make drugs at a far less cost and sell them at a very high price in the United States.
Well, I would never underestimate the role of greed, and certainly part of my job is to excavate the profit motives behind this. Actually, when it came to India, there was a more initially positive origin to this, which is during the HIV/AIDS crisis, the U.S. did something that was pretty innovative, which is they tried to get low-cost Indian manufacturers to make HIV drugs for Africa. As a part of that effort, they tried to ensure that those drugs were FDA approved. In other words, that U.S. taxpayers weren't buying counterfeit meds from India to send to Africa. And as that happened, our population was like, well, wait a second. If these drugs are good enough to be approved by our own regulators, why can't we take them too? And in fact, it was a drive for low-cost pharmaceuticals that really led to the growth of these overseas manufacturers. You know, a failure to regulate brand-name drug prices that pushed us into the arms of these very low-cost suppliers in India.
Catherine, you mentioned 24 drugs being kept in-country in China. What kind of drugs are most affected right now by the pandemic and by decisions like that?
Well, I mean, one issue right now is that there's a critical shortage of drugs that patients who are on ventilators use. So fentanyl and morphine-type drugs, sedative drugs to keep vented patients treated. And those have been in critical shortage. Then, of course, there's this rather strange battle going on over hydroxychloroquine, which the president has touted as a game changer in the treatment against COVID-19. It's not at all clear that it is, but nonetheless, there's been a struggle to get hydroxychloroquine supplies, many of which are made in India and China.
We're talking with journalist and author Catherine Eben, who is our guide as we learn, you know, that hospitals are reporting shortages of critical meds and the rate at which prescriptions are filled and shipped to hospitals has dropped. Which drugs do you most worry the pandemic could affect? Have you switched from a name brand drug to a generic version or vice versa? What complications did that cause? Are you trying to adjust your meds right now? What is it like? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in a minute for more conversation with Catherine Eben right here on the Ideas Network. Thank you. If you're just joining us, we're tracing a shortage of meds in the U.S., the backstory around supply chain issues, and the history of drug company inventories. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Even before this crisis emerged, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration identified shortages of well over 100 drugs in the U.S. The FDA currently lists, I checked last night, 94 drugs in a shortage status. Factory shutdowns in China, India, other countries may worsen the situation. So what questions do you have about how our drug supply chain works? How do you want to see lawmakers regulate the industry? Are you trying to stock up on crucial drugs for the next few months? Can you afford it? Be part of this at 800-642-1234. Catherine Eben wrote the 2019 book called A Bottle of Lies, and she stays with us. So, Catherine, a 2012 law requires companies to tell the FDA if they're having manufacturing issues 6 months in advance of a possible shortage, and that way the FDA is supposed to jump on that to help prevent a shortage. Has that been effective?
You know, we have still struggled with shortages. One of the reasons for that, it might be surprising for some people, which is, you know, because of the what I call the generic drug revolution, what happens is when a drug goes off patent and a number of companies start making that drug in a generic form, the price plunges. And as the price plunges, the incentives for quality inside manufacturing plants also drop. The question is, how are companies going to make a profit with prices so low? So what happens is they begin undercutting their own safety regulations. And if regulators catch them and have to shutter their plants or halt their plants or sanction their plants, then we lose another manufacturer of a critical drug, at least for a time being. So it is kind of the sort of plummeting levels of quality that are associated with low costs that have ended up contributing to these shortages in a big way.
How often is the FDA in these plants, inspecting these plants, and if issuing any type of citation, if necessary?
Well, this is one of the huge problems that my book exposes. The FDA is supposed to be in these plants every 2 years, no matter where on the globe they're located, whether they're in Wisconsin or they're in, you know, Wuhan, China. But because of the logistics of inspecting overseas, the FDA has been giving these manufacturing plants, foreign manufacturing plants, months of advance notice that they're coming. They ask these plants to arrange their ground travel and transportation. So the dynamic is that the inspectors, once they show up, are more like the plant's invited guests. So the effect that has is of you know, making the plants appear compliant because they prepare for the FDA visits. But that can mask serious quality problems that, if and when they get exposed, do result in serious citations.
So there's no surprise visit per se, but when they are on site at a plant, what are they looking for? What can they tell on site?
Well, one of the huge revelations of the last several years and in my book is that these plants are engaging in widespread data fraud. What that means is that they will alter, so in order to get approval from the FDA, they will submit data showing that their drugs fall within specifications, they appear to be bioequivalent, they appear to be stable, they don't have impurity spikes, and it's based on that data that companies get approval. The plants are faking some of that data. They're pre-testing the drugs and figuring out how to alter the testing specifications on the official computer systems in order to get approvals. And There have been one very innovative FDA investigator I focus on in the book, Peter Baker, figured out how to detect this, even with pre-announced visits, because he would look directly in the manufacturing plant's computer systems and find evidence of this secret pre-testing.
Would this secret pre-testing be going on with brand name drugs or just generics?
Largely, this is going on in generic plants, because what they have to show is that their drugs meet the same specifications as the brand name drugs, right? They're trying to show that their drugs are bioequivalent, and it's that data that they are altering or faking or manipulating in order to gain approvals.
We're talking with Catherine Eben, who writes about the pharmaceutical industry. We're taking your questions and comments this hour on the prescription medication marketplace. What are you seeing in the supply of your medications? What is it like when you talk with pharmacists and physicians? What issues do you see in the supply chain or in the generic drug market? How are your generic drugs working? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We just heard from Karen in Muskego, who emailed us to say that they are a pharmacist and they have been concerned about drugs being made overseas. Karen says, when the coronavirus outbreak happened in China, they planned ahead by purchasing a six-month supply of medicine and supplies. Catherine, have you heard of stockpiling stories like this?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is really huge, the stockpiling problem. And, you know, just one example of that, when President Trump announced, that he felt really, really good about hydroxychloroquine, which is an old malaria drug, which is, by the way, unproven against COVID-19. But he started talking about this drug, and that created immediate shortages worldwide. With everybody trying to stockpile these drugs, with doctors trying to prescribe the drug for themselves or their families. This is one of the reasons that the FDA doesn't like to, announce drugs that may be headed for a shortage, because they don't want people to stockpile them in advance.
Because that can totally upend the marketplace itself.
Right.
And there's also this model of 30-30-30 in the supply chain. How does that work?
Well, as one of the people I interviewed described it to me, the U.S. has a 30-30-30 drug supply, which is we have about 30 days of drugs on the shelves. We have about 30 days of inventory with wholesalers, and then it takes about 30 days to get, ingredients and drugs through the supply chain into the wholesale market. So basically, you have about 90 days before something just absolutely runs out. So, I mean, one example of the impact of coronavirus on this, there is a lot of active ingredient manufacturing in northern Italy. And look at how hard Italy was hit by coronavirus with plants shutting down, right?
Yeah.
And now, here the U.S. is struggling to get drugs to treat this absolute, avalanche of COVID-19 patients in hospitals, and all kinds of essential drugs are in shortage, not to mention medical equipment, protective gear, swabs for tests, reagents. It's not enough to just say we have to ramp up testing. If you ramp up testing, you need the swabs, the test kits, the protective equipment that the technicians have to wear who administer the tests. Inside of hospitals, if you have to ventilate patients, you need drugs to treat them. So this is, the fact that we are not manufacturing these essential essential equipment, essential drugs, and we are so reliant on the rest of the world, is really exposing the dangers of this.
I mean, certainly drugs expire, but does our nation have any type of stockpile of very important drugs? I'm thinking maybe insulin.
You know, so there is something called the Strategic National Stockpile, which is these caches of equipment and medicine, which is overseen by Health and Human Services. And these are, you know, caches of drugs that are around the country. But actually, what I have heard in my reporting now, there's actually really kind of not that many pharmaceuticals in the stockpile. Mm-hmm. There's equipment, you know, but we really do not have stockpiled anywhere in the U.S. enough drugs to get us through this.
We're talking with journalist Catherine Eben. She's been covering the pharmaceutical industry for a decade. Do you think the global pandemic will change the way prescription drugs are made? Pharmacists, what holes do you see in the supply chain? How have you reacted? Physicians, what issues do you see in the generic market? Be part of this 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with Catherine Eben right after this news update here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We here at WPR are so appreciative to everyone who donated during our spring member drive. Support from people like Peter and Madison sustains the trusted news and information you value on the Ideas Network. To ensure the resources are in place, we do fundraise throughout the year, which is all been impacted at this time. So if you missed the drive, your gift now at WPR.org is especially important. And thank you for your support. Right now, we're finding out that COVID-19 will likely lead to U.S. drug shortages. Over at the University of Minnesota, the Resilient Drug Supply Project aims to provide a detailed map of the entire supply chain for important drugs used in the U.S. They've compiled a list of more than 150 drugs used in acute care that, if unavailable for a short time, can lead to increased patient death rates. Have you been unable to get a drug you need since the pandemic took hold? What do you want to know about how the supply chain works? Still time for you at 800-642-1234. We have investigative journalist Catherine Eben, who stays with us for the hour. We heard from Gary in Iron River, who emailed this morning. Gary wondered, Catherine, if the FDA could randomly buy and test drugs from all suppliers in the U.S., and Gary thinks that would seem easy and cost-effective, a better system than visiting every 2 years. Would that work?
So, one of the issues in the manufacture of pharmaceuticals is governed by something called good manufacturing practices. It's an elaborate set of rules that are designed to ensure the quality and safety of drugs. But one thing that is not encouraged in this is what's called testing into compliance. So, you know, if let's say you have 1 million drugs, you can't test 1 million drugs. You can sample test, and that's a good thing, right, to see if those samples test well. But you also need to couple that with an understanding of the process by which a drug is made. So manufacturers are required to have data that accompanies each step of the manufacturing to show that manufacturing plants are in a state of control as they make the drugs. That's kind of the underpinning of good manufacturing practices, which is you may have to make sure that the environment in which the drugs are made is compliant. You can couple that with testing as, you know, a guarantee of safety and efficacy. But you can't just test, you know, sample test a batch to make sure that it's okay.
It's like an elaborate, far-reaching audit, if you will.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. I mean, that's what FDA investigators are doing, are essentially auditing these plants, you know, For example, if you're making a drug in a sterile facility, you have to test the air, you have to test the water, you have to test the surfaces. You know, does the data show that that those plants are complying with good manufacturing practices or not? Manufacturing plants are required to investigate themselves if they have drugs that are out of specification or any abnormal results. So this is a, you know, very sort of vital component of making a safe drug.
You've talked with people who said that generic drugs they took were not working as prescribed. What do you see there? What did they tell you?
So this is actually how I got involved in reporting on this. It was in 2008, and I got a phone call from a radio show host named Joe Graydon.
He People's has an Pharmacy.
Yes, that's right.
we know
exactly
that show,
right.
On
yeah.
Saturday mornings.
Yep.
Carry
and
on.
He called me to say that patients he was being flooded with complaints from listeners, patients, who said that their generic drugs were not effective or they were suffering from side effects. And he's a trained pharmacologist. He thought there was something potentially wrong with the drugs, and he recommended that I start investigating. You know, but as I delved deeper into this and I talked with patients and I talked with doctors, what sources increasingly were saying to me is, if you really want to understand what's going on, you need to look at where the drugs are being made. And that was the information that ended up taking me to India and China to report on this.
Sherry from Madison called, couldn't stay with us. Sherry says their insurance covers generic drugs, but not any brand name drugs. And Sherry wonders why that might be. Where is insurance in this supply chain, in this whole marketplace, if you will?
Insurance plays a huge role in this because insurers are basically forcing everybody to take the lowest cost drugs. So often those are generic drugs that are manufactured in India or China. You know, but what became clear to me as I reported more on this, there are no studies that look at potentially the hidden costs of low-cost generics. So what I mean by that is, are patients who take these drugs or who are switched to these drugs from brand, are they relapsing? Are they having adverse events? You know, in my book, Bottle of Lies, I report on heart transplant patients who were recovering nicely after being discharged from the Cleveland Clinic, and then they were switched to a low-cost generic immunosuppressant, and they wound up back in the ICU. So, you know, is there a hidden cost to these medication switches?
So we have patient anecdotes here that something's may not be working right. It could be the drug itself.
Mm-hmm.
Do we ever get to the bottom of this? Can we pinpoint the culprit if a patient has some type of reaction that is not helpful to their health?
Well, I mean, in the book, I focus on a doctor named Harry Lever, who was at the Cleveland Clinic, he's a cardiologist, and he began to realize that patients he'd stabilized on certain drugs were becoming unstable once they were switched to certain generics from low-cost providers in India. And he was actually able to essentially diagnose not just his patients, but diagnose the drug supply. So I think there is a way to pinpoint if a patient is stabilized and they become unstable after a medication switch. Yes, I think you can pinpoint it. Then you triangulate that with the fact that some of these companies are faking their quality data, and I think you do have a very clear culprit.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with journalist Catherine Eben, who covers the pharmaceutical industry. You can join in. Have you ever felt different after switching from a name brand drug to a generic version? What were you told when you asked your physician or pharmacist about it? And how was that transition for you? What was it like? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Stan now, joining us from De Pere. Hi, Stan.
Yeah, good morning. I'm curious. We have laws in this country that certain products have to be made in the United States as part of national defense. It seems pretty silly to rely on China and India for our, you know, essential drug supply. Why don't we just include that as a national defense item and say it has to be manufactured in the United States?
I think that is a great idea. And actually, Stan, the Pentagon agrees with you. I testified at a commission last August, the China Security and Economic Commission. There was a guy from the Pentagon who testified and said, our dependence on Chinese pharmaceutical ingredients is a national security risk. You know, so there is a very strong argument to be made for exactly what you're saying, but that has not been done and yet. And the question is whether, you know, this pandemic and our, you know, life-threatening scramble for drug supplies is going to change this.
Stan, thank you. Let's bring in Kate now, joining us from Shatek. Good morning, Kate.
Hi, good morning. Good morning to your guests. Sorry, I have seasonal allergies. So I've been wondering, I donate plasma at a center down in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and through donating, I've found out that it takes about 6 months to turn the plasma donations into usable medicine for the people that are needing it. And I think that's the immunocompromised, et cetera, the exact same people being kind of targeted through the COVID-19 pandemic. And I'm wondering, because I know there's considerably fewer number of people donating plasma. When I go, there's not always very many people there like there used to be. What's the outlook medication-wise for those people that require medication made from our plasma donations?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know the answer specifically in that case, but obviously, you know, these kinds of critical medicines are all being depleted by the crisis, by the lack of manpower, by, you know, fewer patients donating. Certainly, the effects are felt really across the board.
And if there is any shortage in that intricate supply chain, it's like a domino effect.
Yes, it is a domino effect. It absolutely is a domino effect. So, you know, again, that is why there is really sort of more talk than ever about the critical need for America to make its own life-saving pharmaceutical and medical supplies.
We're talking with Catherine Eben. She's our guide to drug shortages, the weaknesses, as we've been talking about in the supply chain, how pharmaceutical companies are responding. Still time for you. Have you found it difficult to fill your prescription? Have you had to ration your meds to get by at this time? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to this in just a moment. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy, more than 80% of the drugs marketed here in our country, including 19 of the 20 top-selling brand name ones, they're made overseas. So we're exploring whether pharmaceutical companies and suppliers can better anticipate shortages of materials. We're looking at the safety of generics. Still time for your questions, your stories about access to your meds. Have you had disruptions during the pandemic? Could you afford a 3-month supply that the CDC recommends to have on hand? Be part of this 800-642-1234. We have author Catherine Eben, who reports on the pharmaceutical industry, and she stays with us. So, Catherine, part of the federal $2 trillion stimulus package is requiring the Health and Human Services Department to lead a report on the security of the U.S. medical supply chain and look at our dependence on critical drugs overseas. Do you see this as a turning point at all, this reporting?
You know, I think it could be a turning point. It is possible. I mean, in a sane world, which it's, you know, bets are out as to whether we are living in one, you know, you would just look at this situation and you would say, we need to make our own life-saving drugs. You know, the dependence has been flagged by the Pentagon as a national security risk. We are, you know, in high-stakes games of chicken with Indian and Chinese government for supplies. And right now, the FDA can't inspect plants overseas. So we're even more vulnerable because we're relying simply on data that the companies are supplying without any visibility into what's happening inside these plants. So really, both the quality and supply of these essential drugs has never been more in question than now.
Let's bring in another call. Willem is here from Colfax. Hi, Willem.
Hi, good morning. You know, all the references to national security, we have like a Homeland Security Committee in the United States Senate that's headed by our Senator Ron Johnson, and we have the intelligence agencies, and we have intelligence agencies' daily briefings to the president, and the president ran on America First, and he had a lot of nasty things to say about China and other countries. Why was this such a surprise? I mean, would it have been a surprise or would it have just been ignored?
When you say surprise, you mean our pharmaceutical dependence or corona?
Yeah, our pharmaceutical dependence on foreign supplies. Would that have been a surprise to this, to an administration, or would they just have not really given it much thought?
You know, there's no surprise whatsoever. I mean, this has been a reality in our country for really over a decade now. I think, you know, the question is, where is the political will to fix it? Where is the political will to address it as a critical issue? I mean, one of the things that my book, Bottle of Lies, did was expose how perilous this dependence is because of the widespread fraud in these overseas plants, that not only are we dependent on these drugs, but we're actually vulnerable to the manipulation of data where the drugs are being represented as bioequivalent and safe when they aren't necessarily. So, but as far as, you know, an agenda to fix this problem, there are no surprises here,
Willem,
as to our dependence.
Willem, thanks for the call. Let's bring in Paul now, who is joining us from Arcadia. Hi, Paul.
Good morning. Enjoying the program. You had a specific question on two medications over the last probably year and a half, Losartan and ranitidine. And
yeah,
the contamination with the NDMA, just exactly how widespread that is. I do work in the medical field, and I've had to change prescription to other drugs for a lot of patients because of the recall.
Yeah, so this is really the valsartan and losartan problem, and the ranitidine issues are a great example of an unfortunate but great example of the problems that we're facing. So basically millions of Americans found out that they had been taking a blood pressure medication that had carcinogens in them. And these were, it was due to active ingredients from overseas plants that had been contaminated with NDMA, which is the carcinogen. And this was really all due to a manufacturing failures in which these companies were not investigating impurity spikes in their own drugs.
What are they prescribed for?
For high blood pressure, widely taken by millions of Americans who basically found out that they had been taking drugs that contained carcinogens. To me, what this episode really highlights is that even though the FDA is inspecting plants, which it has to do, and but it's not testing drugs. It's not testing the drugs. You have to not just inspect and not just review company data, but you have to test. And in fact, it illustrates another problem because an FDA investigator went to one of the big plants in China that was making these active ingredients, and they flagged that the company, that the plant was not adequately testing impurity spikes in its own drugs, and recommended strong sanctions against the plant, which the FDA declined to impose.
So how long would a recall last, and where will the defective medication go to ensure it is destroyed?
Yeah, that's a great question. So defective medication is supposed to be destroyed, right? If it's not fit for consumption for U.S. consumers, it's not fit for anyone. One of the very tragic things that I expose in my book is that a lot of these manufacturing plants will take medicine that they can't sell into more regulated markets. They'll sell it to Africa. They'll sell it to their own market in India. They'll sell it, you know, to South America. They have found markets where they can dump low-quality drugs.
So even though that it has been recalled in one country, that
right.
does not have any bearing on another customer in another country.
That is correct. Yeah. So what that the end result is that the manufacturing standard amounts to whatever you can get away with.
So in the meantime, when a drug like that is widely used to regulate blood pressure, where do those patients turn? What are their alternatives during a time of a recall?
You know, that has been extremely difficult for patients, and I'm sure your caller has experienced this, which is patients have found themselves in a kind of pinball machine of recalls because the patients were on Valsartan. They switched to Losartan. Then the Losartan was recalled. Different manufacturers have been recalled. So it's really been a series of rolling recalls with patients trying to figure out what drug is safe to take. And often they don't even know that the drug they're on has been recalled. That's another problem. So it's really a very, I think, bewildering landscape for patients.
In the last few seconds we have with you, what are you watching out of the pharmaceutical industry as we get deeper into this pandemic?
That's really an excellent question. I mean, I think the question that is going to loom is if there is a drug that is found to be successful in treatment of COVID-19, how is it going to be manufactured at scale? How is it going to be shared? How are we going to ensure that patients around the world have access to it at a time when there is, you know, suspicion and minimal cooperation between nations?
Catherine, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's really been a pleasure.
Journalist Catherine Eban covers the pharmaceutical industry. She's the author of the book called Bottle of Lies. Just ahead, it's On Point. The coronavirus wave is still rising in Miami, Los Angeles, and Houston. We'll hear from Latino leaders in all three places. That's On Point coming up. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.